Good afternoon. You're listening to Gambling with an Edge. Now here are your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is a repeat visitor named Max Coins. Max is an option trader who is heavily into crypto, and he has some recent experiences being there when there was big betting going on. So Max Coins, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
So let me jump in, because I really asked Max to come on to talk about this, because I've recently become interested in it. But I want to just sort of give some disclaimers right here from the start. None of this is financial advice. Crypto is super risky, not just because of variance, but also because of there are a lot of scam artists out there. But the reason that I got interested in it is because it reminded me of the very early days of online gambling. And there was tons of money to be made in online gambling when it first started. Well, there may still be. But it was risky. You ran the same sort of risks that you wouldn't get paid or that people were scamming you. But the rewards were so high that even if you did get stiffed by some internet casinos, you still ended up making a lot of money if you knew what you were doing. So that's why so this is not going to be, you know, buy the latest Dogecoin or buy Bitcoin and here are all the reasons why it's going to $100,000. This is not that. So with the disclaimers out of the way, Max, why don't you first tell us how you got interested and what is DeFi?
Okay, so I agree with all of your previous statements, by the way. It's, you know, my approach to this is not necessarily to be like recommending any particular tokens or coins or anything like that. First of all, just kind of my background, half of my career I spent trading options on floor. And then the other half has been working for a professional trading software provider. So I basically design trading algorithms for derivatives and mostly just options and futures. And this is what kind of led me into crypto in the first place. I've known about this for years, and like everybody else, I'm regretting not getting into this earlier or getting interested in this earlier. But over the last couple of years, all of our growth is in the crypto space. So traditional trading firms are all looking into doing crypto derivatives and things like this. And there's a big proliferation of trading opportunity there. So I, just by virtue of the job that I have to do a lot of research on crypto. And as I found that I was doing this research, I became very personally interested in it also, because it wasn't just during work time. It was basically all after hours and everything. I would just start exploring all these new protocols and things like that. One thing that Richard just asked me to explain is DeFi. So DeFi stands for decentralized finance. And one thing that, the crypto framework kind of brings to the party is that there are all sorts of new financial instruments that aren't really possible in the real world that are possible in crypto. And to give you a very good example of this, there's something in crypto known as a flash loan. And normally, when you take a loan in real life, you do a bunch of signing of documents with the bank, and you generally provide some sort of collateral. And, you know, there's the bank will issue you money based on the value of the collateral at some sort of discount. So, you know, bank loans are over collateralized. This happens when you take a mortgage on a house or anything like that. In crypto, though, there exists a model where I can borrow an unlimited amount of money up to the amount that the lender has, with no collateral, provided that I pay it back in the same exact transaction. So Everything is sequential in most of what I talk about is in the Ethereum universe. It's just because it's where almost all of DeFi occurs right now. I mean, there are side chains. They tend to be Ethereum compatible, but I don't want to get too complicated about this. I mean, you know, just in very basic terms, if I wanted to, you know, if I noticed there was some arbitrage opportunity where I could buy one crypto and sell it at one exchange and then sell it on a different exchange and make some money off of it, I can actually, if I know how to code this, scale it up without actually having to have collateral. So I could borrow $100 million, do the trade, make $105 million, and then, you know, pay back the $100 million that I borrowed along with the 0.09% interest or whatever it is they happen to be charging for a instantaneous loan. And as long as all of that happens in the same transaction, it goes through. If any part of the transaction fails, it's as though it never happened in the first place. And since everything is sequential on the blockchain, you can have transactions that revert as though they didn't happen in the first place. So very interesting, because there's absolutely nothing like that I can think of in traditional finance. And that's just one example of things you can sort of pull off in the crypto space. Now, back to the original question, why I got very into this. You know, the more that I studied this, the more I realized, oh my goodness, there's so much out there. And again, what Richard was saying, that it reminds him of early internet casino days. It's like this with any sort of casino advantage play. I mean, that's been a hobby of mine to varying degrees for the last almost 30 years also. But this, you know, the world of decentralized finance is like 10,000 casinos, and they're all inventing their own table games, and there are no pit bosses and no backoffs. And it's amazing. All you have to do is figure out what to do, and you can do this. And there are some insanely profitable opportunities. Of course, it is completely riddled with scams and everything like that. You definitely have to figure out what you're doing. There's security issues you've never probably had to consider before. And all of that exists too. But as long as you keep yourself to investing in opportunities to with a limited amount of your own capital, like you want to spread around the risk, then even if you get burned every so often, it's still way, way positive value. I haven't gotten burned so substantially by things like hacks or anything like that. I've had some kind of quasi, I guess in crypto we call it getting rugged. I've had some situations that were sort of like that. I've been liquidated in a major leveraged position before. That's not fun either. All of this I just chalk up to learning opportunities and things like that. But, you know, I kind of make it a general rule not to invest more than a certain amount of my portfolio in any particular thing. It's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but.
So okay. Betting $100 million at once was just a small part of your portfolio. Is that what you're telling us?
No, because it has to be a profitable trade to happen in the first place. So a flash loan, you're actually not, I wouldn't even talk about that as a bet, because if that opportunity were not as you thought it was, or it went away by the time you got to do it, it's as though you didn't do anything at all. And all you've paid is the transaction cost, which would be on the order of, you know, hundreds of dollars, not, you know, millions of dollars.
So zero risk, really, or almost zero risk.
For that kind of transaction, yes. I mean, there's very little that's zero risk in this industry, because people are discovering things all the time. But yes, a lot of these things are definitely very, you know, risky ventures. And again, this is true of any sort of risk. If you're creating a portfolio of stocks or options or any financial instrument, I mean, you have you know, Kelly criterion considerations, right? The same thing with blackjack betting. You have an optimal portfolio growth that's going to be a function of the expected value and the variance of what it is you're trying to do. So, you know, the more variance in the thing, the less of your bankroll you should be betting on that thing.
Sure, but impossible to know what your risk is, right? I mean, it's all just conjecture, trying to come up with risk. But I wanted to get to, just like casinos, these various places have promotions. And one of them was a trading contest that you participated in. So tell us about that.
Okay, so I've done a few of these sort of trading competitions. A lot of times when protocols are launching some sort of model, they'll pair it with something that the community can get involved in. It's good for marketing, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of these things, when they launch either testnet trading competitions or ones that actually use real money, it's really good value to kind of get involved. And there's a couple of ways that this can pay off. The first thing is that whenever you do a trading competition, whether it's, you know, something, you know, in crypto or whether it's any sort of other contest, same thing with like slot tournaments and whatever, it's not generally about like who's the best trader, or if it were a video poker tournament, who's the best video poker player? Because often the strategy changes dramatically depending on what you're trying to accomplish. And in this case, what you're trying to do is beat a whole bunch of other people at the same game. So the trading competitions, normally you're just trying to swing from the fences and to win those. This is not a hallmark of a good trader, but it is a hallmark of someone who's trying to increase variance to win a trading competition. So the particular one that I was involved in was for a leveraged futures platform called GMX. And they did an interesting trading competition. Of course, they're all making up the rules as they go along. And like anything else with dealing with a casino promotion or whatever, it's good to sort of figure out what the rules are and then bend them, I guess, to, you know,
exploit them. Yes.
Well, yeah, just figure out how to optimize what it is you're trying to do. I mean, I'm not advocating cheating in any form. I just think it's good to read the rules, figure out the rules, and then do the right thing. And sometimes it's not clear to all the other participants who maybe aren't studying it as closely what the optimal path is. But in this particular case, the main rewards went out to the person who did the best overall and the person who did the worst overall. So for one thing, it's very easy in crypto to make more than one wallet. And so I entered this contest as two different accounts. And this is well known. This is not, you know, breaching any rules. I'm sure I'm not the only one doing this. And it's generally sanctioned just fine by the people promoting the contest. But in this case, the trades that counted toward the promotion had to be $1,000 or more. And they had a very specific definition of this, because when you enter into a leveraged futures position, you are putting up a certain amount of capital for a certain, you know, risk profile. So in this case, if you go up to a 30 times leveraged position, you're putting up $1,000 and you're getting $30,000 worth of leverage. Well, what the contest was very specific about, and I think it was a subtlety that escaped most people, is that it mattered when you cashed out what your position, your total, not your position, the total amount of cash that you put up. And there is an interest rate associated with this. So if I put in, for instance, $1,001, then after a day, this might be $999. And you were allowed to adjust your position after the fact. So the idea was that I would put up offsetting trades. So basically go long 30 times Ethereum and short 30 times Ethereum, and then long 30 times Bitcoin and short 30 times Bitcoin, and just have all of these at just slightly over $1,000 invested. And then over time, one of these would win and one of these would lose. And the one, depending on whether I was trying to do the best performance or the worst performance, I would basically just top off the account that where I wanted the trade to count, and then cash that one out, and then not top off the other one and cash that one out. So basically, I could have a perfect record of winning or losing trades in each account because I had offsetting trades. So I set this up and I started winning both sides of the competition, right? So I would just, you know, deliberately have one, and it looked like in one I was a genius trader, and one I was an idiot trader. And really, all I was doing is paying, you know, transaction fees. And in this particular contest, they weren't even that big. It was not on Ethereum, it was on a layer two network. So there wasn't a lot of, investment, I guess, other than my time. But it got to the point where I was definitely like, you know, having a perfect record on both sides of it. So one day I woke up, because the contest was to last for a week, and I was, you know, crushing it there. And I noticed that they had canceled a whole bunch of my transactions. So this is one of those things where, you know, casinos do this too. At some point, you know, they realize somebody's sort of exploiting the rules, and they change the rules. And I'm not a fan of this kind of behavior. I think if you, you know, you really should plan out your contest a little bit better, maybe figure out these kind of loopholes. Again, not everybody's going to be perfect at this, but, you know, just from my casino experience, I'm pretty good at spotting when there's opportunities like this. And so I figured, similar to casinos, what you want to do is then negotiate with them. So I contacted the founder of the protocol and, you know, eventually got to a hold of the person who was in charge of the contest and basically demonstrated to him that I'm not a bad guy. I'm just trying to figure out the rules and win the contest, right? I'm not trying to cheat anybody out of anything. And, you know, these were the rules that you gave me, and this is the best way I can play the game given those rules. And so he went back and talked to his people and everything and just said, well, we're not going to reinstate you, but what we'll do is we'll reimburse you $1,800 for your efforts. Now, this contest had a maximum prize of $25,000. So
on each side, right?
On each side, yes. So while I wasn't happy about this because it basically eliminated my, like, I dropped far enough down on both of those lists. There were only about 2 days left in the contest. I had other ideas on, you know, that were a bit less effective, but still effective on, you know, getting, being able to increase my place. And I said, well, that's great. And then I said, but here, what I want to do is I found, you know, a couple of other ways to exploit this. And this basically involved, you know, instead of letting the account go below and then topping it up, that I could actually start with a little less money and then top it up on the ones where it was to my advantage. It was basically kind of reversing the thing that I did. And I said, do you think I can do this? And are you going to take it back again if I do? Like, I want permission ahead of time. And he went back to his people and he's like, you know, that's actually really clever. We're going to let you do that. And I said, great. So in the next couple of days, I did a few of this. Again, it was less effective based on the rules of the contest. So while I wasn't able to capture first place, I did get a couple of lower places. And total, I made $8,000 from the competition, which isn't bad. A little sad that I couldn't win both of these things, but this is all part of the how it goes. I'm not entirely surprised it went down this way. But very much similar to casino promotions. I mean, you know, I can think of all sorts of things. I know Bob has lots of stories about this, about practicing on wheels and, you know, that kind of thing. There's always a way.
Was there a promotion dealing with Discord that you talked about?
So that was another thing. So there's something that comes up in crypto a lot, especially because in decentralized finance, the landscape changes daily. I mean, crypto moves fast. There are new protocols all the time. Something that happens in the world of crypto is that it tends to, when these new protocols launch, they launch with a token. And the token is generally used for governance decisions like voting rights. It might include revenue share. The closest real world equivalent to that would be stock. So when a company launches, they might have an IPO, something like that, issue shares. People can buy those shares, and then it entitles you to some portion of the company and voting rights and et cetera, et cetera. Well, in crypto, this is the token. But one thing that's sort of parallel to the, I guess, you know, the way most of these crypto operations are is that they don't necessarily focus on money at first. They focus on community. So a lot of times when new crypto platforms launch, they will airdrop tokens to the people who are either early adopters, have tested their models. These trading competitions are a great way to get involved in that, because sometimes just your participation in that, even though it wins a prize, everybody who participates might get an airdrop later when they go to release a token or something like that. So there was a platform that I was very involved in. They had a trading competition also. It's called Lyra, and it's a decentralized options trading platform. So I participated in their trading contest. I used to be I'm active in their Discord channel and, you know, helping people with option strategies, helping the people designing the protocol around, you know, just with, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. So I have a lot of experience in how, you know, how to make markets and options and the theory behind it, even like designing trading algorithms and things like that. And so I've helped them out. And then, of course, I joke around with them in the Discord. And as it turned out, Lyra decided to airdrop based on the number of characters you typed in their Discord. And it's really funny because they had like different multipliers depending on what sort of things you contributed and what you were involved in and everything. But a lot of what I typed, I'd say a good half of it or more, was just like random chit chat. Like it was just being social. It wasn't anything, you know, all that exciting. But as it turned out, they rewarded me at something. It was more than a dollar per character typed. So they gave me $50,000 for just interacting, you know, and not everything that I did was, again, you know, in helping their business. It was just like, you know, just chit-chatting. And this is not the only example of airdrops in crypto. In fact, there's something that is kind of controversial right now. The one of the larger crypto platforms called DYDX, which is a decentralized exchange, airdropped their tokens to their users, but U.S. customers were eliminated from consideration. So everyone who was not in the US, or, you know, who didn't log in from a US address, and so people around the world, even if you logged in once from America, you were not allowed, because the SEC told them that they were not allowed to, you know, these are securities and they're not allowed to, you know, give them out. And so people got airdrops that were like hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases. And certainly like five figures was the minimum that you were getting from this. But all the U.S. people were protected by Gary Gensler and the SEC and everything from just making a whole bunch of money. It's not like it was, you know, they were asking for investment. They were just literally giving out their shares. And you could just sell it immediately, make a profit, and walk away. Didn't matter. So that's kind of something to consider if you are into crypto or doing, you know, protocols. It might be a good idea to get a VPN and log in from a different country. I think I'm speaking from Mexico right now, according to Skype. But yeah, and you know, again, it's really just because there's a lot of uncertainty in, you know, who's going to go after whom, and historically, you know, there were similar problems with online casinos, right? But historically, the government doesn't go after the users, that goes after the, you know, the purveyors. So that's, you know, my airdrop story. But there are other examples of this. I've made quite a bit of money in different kinds of airdrops. You just want to kind of get involved in every single thing that comes up, like even just a little bit. And just mess with the protocol, because who knows, sometime down the line, they might just give you a bunch of money just for having experimented.
It sounds like you can't afford to hold down a 40-hour-a-week job. You have to keep up on all this stuff and then have these random chats that are going to give you $50,000. How can you afford to have a regular job?
So I'm extremely fortunate in that my job has 100% crossover with all of this. So the research that I do directly affects what I do for a living, which is to basically, a lot of it is to consult with clients who are doing crypto trading, crypto derivatives trading. So when I research these protocols, it overlaps. The thing that's suffered in my life is my casino play. So I never go in, like, casinos to me, like, I used to play video poker. I mean, I don't play as much as Bob, but I definitely have millions of hands under my belt of video poker over time. And that, you know, playing for like 1% advantage, which is good in video poker. And, you know, I can't even like think about doing that. That to me is like, it's almost like it's boring at that point.
Well, not only is the edge in the casino so small, the stakes are so small comparatively.
Yes, crypto definitely scales. You can play at whatever portfolio level you want to. I've met people on Discord who are literal billionaires in crypto, and they're throwing around, you know, eight and nine figure trades Of course, they have like slippage concerns and things when they're doing things, but they also wield a whole lot of influence. And it's kind of amazing what you know, what sort of capacity there is in this environment. It's really something I don't think you get a good handle on from watching the news, and the people who generally report on crypto are not very knowledgeable about it, let's just say.
Well, like anything, right? I mean, if you have expertise in any area, once you watch the news, if they start talking about that area, you realize they don't have a clue. As any of our listeners who's ever seen, you know, 60 Minutes cover some gambling segment, and you end up rolling your eyes. But so could you explain staking and yield farming and the types of interest rates involved?
Yeah, sure. So something that happens a lot in decentralized finance, and the thing that really kind of kicked it off, and again, this is brand new. Like, really, it's only a couple of years old, if that. The summer of 2020, I think, was the kind of big, they called it DeFi summer. It's when a couple of the big platforms were launched, and people started realizing that that since there is so much value stored in crypto, there are ways of using that value to create other value. Just to give an example, you might hold some particular crypto. I'm trying to think of an example that's going to be sort of simple to relay. So something that's in the news right now a lot is stable coins. So there are coins that either algorithmically or just by simply holding underlying assets try to replicate the value of a dollar. And so Coinbase issues one called USDC, where they are one-to-one backed by cash and or very, very short-term treasuries or something. Like, it's super solid backing. There are sketchier versions of this, like Tether, that claim to be backed but don't really submit the audits. And then there are algorithmic coins like DAI, which are based on being over-collateralized with other deposits. And those are some of the more common ones. There's quite a few of other ones that have all different ways that they have figured out to choose to peg to a dollar. And if you own a bunch of these trade one-to-one with dollars, but in crypto, there's no central bank sort of determining interest rates. And they're, you know, the market is free floating. So if I want to borrow dollars in crypto, I have to find someone willing to lend them to me. And generally the prices at which these trade are, I'd say, usually between like 20% and 40%. And so this reflects what the true interest rates are. I mean, these are, you know, coins pegged to a dollar, and you know, with inflation being kind of as bad as it is, it's probably even understated just based on how all the yield curves end up in crypto. With the base, you know, cryptos like Bitcoin and Ethereum, you have yields that come out of rolling futures and things like that. I guess it's a bit complex, but there are definitely interest rate curves that you can derive from this. So in some cases, you can get yields on stable coins that are close to 100%, which is amazing, because, you know, if your bank is paying you 0.5%, that's considered like amazing in traditional banking world. But if you can convert that to a stable coin, you can get much higher interest rates. And this, of course, with the caveat that anything and everything can go wrong in crypto at any point in time. So you have to be comfortable with the risk profile of that. So, you know, none of this, again, is financial advice, but there are lots of opportunities where you can, for instance, borrow and lend in crypto and generate some other kind of value. And there are some, I hesitate to get into this too much, but there are some examples where you can sort of fold loans by borrowing and lending the same assets over and over again. Some of the lending platforms allow you to do that. They're generating revenue off of the interest that you have to pay, because the interest that you're paying is higher than that which you receive. But they might also throw in some of their yield-bearing tokens as a side benefit. So this It's one of these things that sounds too good to be true, but it seems to work in practice because there's definitely demand for these things. So you can have sometimes ridiculous amounts of interest. Richard and I have discussed a certain platform called DeFi Kingdoms. It's on a side chain called Harmony. Well, not a side chain, it's its own chain, but it's an Ethereum compatible chain. And they've turned the act of borrowing and lending, also known as yield farming, into a game. And before you even get to the game mechanics, there are investments that we've made that are turning 700% interest right now. And this is actually, it's paid out in the protocol's native token, which is driven by game mechanics. So there is sort of a natural demand by people who are playing the game to own the token. And so when they pay out the rewards in this token, you actually can just convert that back into money. And definitely over time, I haven't known about this for more than a couple of months, but in that time, I'm definitely receiving interest that's, you know, comparable to that. It's not just a joke. Well,
in addition, in this particular one, crypto has basically had a huge dip in the last couple of weeks, yet I'm still ahead, which I find kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's crypto's been rough for a few weeks, and that's you have to factor that in if you're earning native tokens and things, that there's definitely volatility there. So I've been pretty impressed too. I mean, some of what I guess the secret to it from the way I've approached it anyway is that yes, they're all going to have these ridiculous inflationary mechanisms. Right, that people, you know, uncharitably can call them Ponzi schemes, and I think it's when you look at the mechanics of it, a lot of them are Ponzi schemes that you can't just sort of like randomly ape into purchasing tokens that are based on these things. I mean, you can, you know, but the whole idea is, of course, you're just trying to buy something to sell it to a larger idiot down the line. Right. That's how that mechanic works. But some of these actually have very clever financial underpinnings. And, you know, it usually becomes clear when you start studying the documentation, the white papers, if they're actually based in any reasonable mathematics or if they are just trying to capture value from a Ponzi type scheme. So some of these tokens, when they first launch, might be offering 20,000% interest or something like that. Well, that, of course, that number is ridiculous. But then when you realize what they're doing is trying to get their token out into the environment, they're trying to spread it around, and they're bootstrapping their protocol. So the inflation rate is going to be something very, very large. Well, if you take into account the inflation rate relative to the interest rate, you're not really getting 20,000% interest because the thing that you are owning is going to drop in value. And what you have to assess is whether the drop in value due to inflation, how that compares to the interest that they're giving you, and the other benefits like airdrops and things like this. So DeFi Kingdoms, for instance, definitely has a very inflationary mechanism. Their base currency called Joule, which was what drives the game, is being printed at a known rate. It's everything is controlled by computer code, so it's not like they can, you know, just print at will, like they do with dollars. you can sort of trust that the schedule is going to be followed because it's enforced by immutable computer code. And so if you take that into account, like, yes, that Joule is a little unusual in that it's paying 700% interest in a lot of the ways that you can invest it. And yet the inflation is sort of countered effectively by all of the people playing the game, because as they're purchasing, you know, heroes, it's sort of an adventure style game, similar to Dungeons and Dragons, I guess, or, you know, there's no real comparison to anything that I know of. And the game, of course, is still being developed, so things appear all the time, but there's incentive for people to like buy and create heroes, and all of this sort of burns the underlying token. So it creates some scarcity. So even though it's an inflating asset, a lot of it is being removed from circulation, by virtue of people playing the game. And so, you know, Richard and I have this, some of the investments that we have specifically looked into are making markets between the underlying Joule token and something like Ethereum, because people who want to get into the game have to spend one token to get another. So you might own Ethereum that you bought on Coinbase. If you want to play in the game, you have to convert some of that to Joule. Well, we are basically making markets automatically between Ethereum and Joule, and you get rewarded from that process, both in the fees that people are paying and also the Joule that they're printing when they're inflating the currency. I'm hoping this isn't like getting too complicated, because it's amazing how complex it gets. Like, the things that are my favorite things in this space, I have spent hours and hours and hours researching, and it is truly like complex beyond anything casual, beyond any casino game or figuring out anything like that. It's very hard to convey. So I hope I'm not getting too.
I want to mention that the thing that got me to actually say, all right, I'm going to take a shot in this, was when I learned from Max that you could do this in your IRA so that you don't have the tax consequences. Because to do this stuff in a taxable account would be a nightmare. So that was a big deciding factor for me. Is I was not aware that you could buy crypto through an IRA, but you can, and I did, and I have made I have put a very small bet into this. I'm not, you know, sinking my whole IRA into this very risky sort of thing, but. That was a huge factor for me.
Yeah. So just on that point, what really surprised me, because I started out trading crypto in a regular account, and then I realized that every single transaction that you do is a taxable event, and it's amazing how complex this gets. I spent something like 60 hours with a manual spreadsheet going through EtherScan, just, you know, because I have 1,000 transactions in there, just trying to make sense of it all, because some of it's income, some of it's capital gain, there's long-term, short-term, there's cost basis, all sorts of things, right? And I'm not even an accountant. I learned all of this just from researching what people have written about this. The rules aren't very clear. And so I thought, wait a minute, what if there's a way I can do this in an IRA? Because there, it's like a black box, right? And sure enough, there are definitely multiple custodial firms that will say you can, you know, link with a Gemini account or something like that and purchase crypto and transfer it to a cold storage wallet, which you control. And all you have to do is report to them every year what the value of that wallet is. And that's what they report to the government. And then, of course, depending on whether it's a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, when you get old enough and start taking the money out, that's when you pay tax or not. You know, if it's a traditional IRA, you skip all of the tax paying at first, but then you have to pay it later as you use the money. So I'm like, why don't people discuss this? Because I'm in 100 Discord groups with crypto people, and then I realized they're all like 22 years old, and so none of them have a retirement account. Like I'm 49, and that is like a great grandfather in this business. It is amazing. Everybody is super young. And so that's why this is never discussed, right? I happen to have an IRA I've been building over the years. And so I have money I can actually invest in crypto. And most people starting out don't have something like that. So I fully agree with Richard there. If you're old enough and have, you know, if you're interested in, you know, dipping your toe into this, doing it in a, you know, an IRA or something where you're not keeping track of every individual transaction will save you a lot of time and heartache, I think.
My son is 27, and I told him if he's going to get involved, he absolutely has to do it through an IRA. So, you're never too young to start saving on taxes. I know we have to go to commercials, but I just have one question, one more question about this. it's fair to say that you are earning more at this than you are at your job. So have you considered leaving the job to do this full time?
Well, of course. I mean, but again, there's so much crossover that it doesn't really behoove me to necessarily do that. I would love to, you know, explore opportunities and things. It just kind of, you know, I want to be very responsible about this because I know that, you know, Ethereum, for instance, had a 95% drawdown in 2017, right? It came back and it came back and roaring past that, right? But for a long time, like if that was your primary source of income, you really had to sweat it for a while. So I don't doubt that these things can happen in crypto. So having a job that's actually, you know, giving a salary is a very reasonable thing, especially at my age. Like I don't necessarily want to, you know, take tons of risk. You know, there's something to be said for that. Of course, the entire first part of my career was trading options, and, you know, there aren't very many jobs where you can go to work and lose a bunch of money. Like that's that's kind of something to get used to. Gambling is like this, of course, also. Like you can hit cold streaks, of course. And I mean, I had a 3-year losing streak in gambling and playing plus edge games. That's tough to do. I mean, I don't know. I know from talking to Bob, he's had losing stretches too, but I don't know what.
Not 3 years.
Right.
My final question is, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners would like to talk to you to find out more information about this. Are you willing to do that? And if so, how do they get in touch with you?
That's kind of a tricky one. I certainly love talking about this topic. I do kind of value staying at least somewhat anonymous for these purposes. So I'm not sure there's a good direct way. I do look at the Gambling with an Edge website, and I know that there's like comments and, you know, when you publish the episodes. So probably the best way of trying to ask a question or something would be in the comments on that, or perhaps on the YouTube video that Richard publishes or something like that. But
yeah, well, best would be at the Gambling with an Edge site, right? You don't want to have to go check the comments on both.
Yeah. That's probably the best, because that's where.
And I, you know, if you really have something long to say, you can always send an email to me or Bob, and we can forward it on, and then Max can ignore it.
No. I chewed Richard's ear about this like a lot. So
I'm interested in it. Yeah, I'm really interested. So.
All right. So this is fascinating. We actually have a lot more to talk to him about something other than crypto. But first we have to hear from our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games returning at least 99%. This is more such games than anyone else has. The December promotions ended on December 23rd, except you can still earn every day one bottle of City Lights Moonshine by playing $1,000 coin in each day, 8 a.m. through midnight until December 31st. We are taping this on the 20th, and as of now, they are down to two flavors. And I'm guessing the flavors are not going to last until the end of the month, but they might. In January, Monday through Thursdays, there's a spin-to-win promotion. Each $2,000 coin in, you spin a virtual wheel, 4 spins a day limit. The points awarded range between $2,500, which would be worth $7.50, and 100,000 points worth $300, which I've never received. The free slot play awards range between $5 and $100. I have received the $50 a couple times in these previous promotions, but no higher. In prior years, the spins averaged $12 each. Until I have more data, that's going to be my best guess as to the value of the spin this year. As I spin away starting January 3rd, I'll give you a better estimate. Monday, January 17th, Martin Luther King holiday, there's a $32,000 hot seat promotion from 8 a.m. to midnight. Every 3 minutes, a lucky player earns $100 in free play.
Hey, this is Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship, and if you're serious about card counting, I'm sure Bob and Richard would agree that there are three things every Advantage player needs to succeed. You need to gain the edge over the house, you need to manage your bankroll, and you need to get the hours in at the casinos. After a decade of playing professionally and running teams, I wanted to create the exact training, tools, and community I wished I had had for myself and my Blackjack teams, so we created the Blackjack Apprenticeship membership. Our membership will help you perfect your game, manage your bankroll, and you'll join a supportive community of like-minded card counters and APs. Find out more at blackjackapprenticeship.com.
VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Triple Triple Bonus Poker. This is an ultra-high variance game, not as high as crypto, though. It is similar to triple-double bonus in that you get paid $800 for one for all aces with a 2, 3, or 4 kicker, but this time you also get $800 for one for all 2s, 3s, and 4s with an ace kicker. This is an additional $400 for one over triple-double bonus for these categories, and that occurs approximately every 13,000 hands. To pay for this, straights are reduced from paying 4-to-1 from 4-to-1 to 3-to-1, which costs you a bit more than 1% because straights come about approximately 1 in 97 hands in this game. The variance is around 140, which will make you wish you stayed home if you don't hit one of the big ones today. All right, we are back to Max Coins. So, you know somebody named Kim. Max, tell us about Kim.
Okay, so Kim has been a guest on your show probably 2 years ago, I think.
Pre-COVID, it was before the pandemic,
right? Yeah. But Kim Holtman, he's a casino streamer, and he talked about his business model. He's basically a casino affiliate. He lives in Malta. He's Swedish. Had to move because the Swedish government wasn't so favorable to casino streamers, but a lot of them basically live in Malta because they get things like deposit bonuses on online casinos, and then when they stream their slot play, people watch, they click on the link, sign up to the casino, and then they get a portion, the streamer gets a portion of their revenue share.
What's his stream called again?
So his stream is Let's Give It a Spin.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And he's on Twitch and YouTube, gets thousands of people watching at any given time, and he's extremely charismatic and entertaining. Well, Kim managed to one of the producers of the High Stakes Poker Show. So this is a show that I watched for something like 7 or 8 years or something like that, but a long time ago, and they had maybe an 8-year hiatus and are basically, you know, continuing seasons of this show. So there was one last year after this long break, and then there's another one coming up. And one of the producers watches Kim's stream and basically suggested to him, Kim used to be a pro poker player before he was a streamer, and approached him asking if he wanted to go play on High Stakes Poker. Now, of course, this is playing against all the, you know, the TV poker people, and it's a minimum buy-in of $100,000 or $250,000, depending on whether they're playing their high stakes version. And Kim was interested in this. And what's funny is that, of course, he's very outclassed among the people who generally play on the show, but the amount of publicity that he would get, you know, even though this was a minus EV play poker-wise, is probably way positive, because he's going to get a lot of, you know, just notoriety from this. So Kim came to town, as he often does, and I've known him for years, and so we normally hang out, and I've been on his stream a lot, and, you know, a lot of times I'm just helping him push the right buttons in video poker, because he's playing generally for like $500 a spin or more, you know, he doesn't necessarily know optimal strategy as well as me, for instance, but whatever, like it's a whole, he's definitely playing a plus game with all of the things that he's involved in. So So I got to go to the studio and I got to meet all the poker players that I have not yet met before that I used to watch. I watched every episode of this that's been published over the years. And, you know, just meeting a lot of these guys was very interesting to me. And so Kim was, you know, in town for this. I can't really talk about his result because the shows that contain him are not going to be released until February. But he definitely had a good time and I had a good time. And there were some, you know, good stories from the trip. He was definitely, he wired over, I think, $600,000 to both participate in the show, but also to just gamble with. And he is not afraid of betting a lot of money. So we did a lot of streaming. It was shocking to me that Cosmopolitan allowed us to film in their high limit tables room.
Yeah, table games. Not just slots. That is amazing.
They've allowed people with permission to film slots. And actually, Cosmo's like super lenient about it. I think anybody can just go and film the slots. Some of the casinos require advanced permission or whatever. And, you know, that all made sense. But filming in high limit tables, like, there's a lot of like potential, you know, security issues with that. But I guess, you know, I'm glad that they did that. I think it's on balance great PR for the casino to allow this. And of course, you know, Kim gets to just bet a whole bunch of money, which the casinos like anyway. So,
but now, didn't one of the casinos he wanted to bet more money, and they would and they wouldn't let him?
Yeah. So this was Cosmo. So he they'll let you do things like this. The table max for blackjack was $10,000 a hand, and they let you play multiple spots. And he was up to playing like three spots of 10,000, but he wanted to just put like one big bet, and they said, well, baccarat you could do 20, like that's the maximum. He's like, well, I want to do 60, and they said, no, we're not going to let you do that. We have a committee that talks about this, and generally you need a few days notice before doing this. This surprised me. I mean, I guess they have their rules and whatever. I'm sure they have reasons for this. But he was getting upset that they wouldn't let him just make one big bet. I don't know.
Crazy.
You know, the rationale is, or whether there's a corporate thing or something like that. I know, you know, in the old days, what was it? Benny Binion would take any bet. It was just you set your maximum by the first bet that you made. And
yep. I mean, they took $1 million bet on craps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, they're just – they don't care about – the pit bosses don't care about winning the money. They just care about keeping their job, so.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we had a lot of discussions. Everybody was very friendly in the casino, and, you know, it was – I think they all understood why we're there, what we're doing. We were having a good time. There was another famous YouTuber. His name is escaping me for the moment.
Mr. Beast.
Yeah, Mr. Beast is a different – story, but I'll get to that in a second. But there was a hip hop artist who has millions of followers who was also playing roulette for, you know, they were letting them bet, I think it was $500 on a number, which is a lot. I guess that's normal for high limit rooms, but, you know.
Not really.
he and Kim were just, you know, on a single number, yeah, I guess.
Well, it's 17-5. If you can bet three hands of 10,000 on blackjack to hit 17-5 on
true. I guess it's comparable, sure. But yeah, it was fun to watch them just like, you know, spewing purple chips all over the belt.
Of course, if it's 500 any way you can get to the number, then that does make it that can get up there much higher.
Yeah, yeah, there were definitely these like constructs. I'm not really a roulette player, but I know that you can. You know, I know how the betting works, and you can actually get a lot more action on that particular number by making several bets that contain that number, right? So, yeah, they were letting you have more exposure than just the straight up bet. But the Mr. Beast story, so this is another interesting thing. Coincidentally, while Kim was in town filming High Stakes Poker, Mr. Beast, or I guess maybe one of his crew or one of his associates, here's a little disclaimer. My kids know who Mr. Beast is and all of his staff, and I really don't. So this was kind of lost on me. But he apparently is the you know, in many measures, the most successful YouTuber currently, right, Mr. Beast?
So, yeah, let me just insert, because many of our listeners probably also don't know. I think he has 50 million followers, and his business model is to give away all the money that he receives from YouTube. He makes money on other things, but the revenue he makes on YouTube, he gives away in his videos. So he'll go into a store, he'll tape out a 6-foot square and just go up to people and say, anything you can fit in that square in the next, you know, 15 minutes, I'll buy, you know. Or he recreated Squid Games, spent millions of dollars recreating Squid Games on his channel. So, and he recently, my son told me this today, he was doing an interview with Logan Paul, who's another big streamer, YouTuber, and he was saying, you know, it's really hard when you have $30 or $40 million a month that you have to give away. So, I don't know. It's kind of mind-boggling how much money must be involved in this.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, you know, it's all about promotion and everything too. And so basically Mr. Beast or one of his people had tweeted that he was in town in Vegas and was interested in a $100,000 buy-in poker game. Now Mr. Beast is not a poker player. I mean, he might be a poker fan. It doesn't strike me that he would be on the caliber of most of the people who play for stakes this large, but whatever. So Kim noticed this and he immediately retweeted to his followers, and he has a substantial amount of them, nothing close to Mr. Beast, but like, hey, like and retweet this because I really want to get into this game with Mr. Beast. And of course they did that, and you know, but there are lots and lots of people who are responding. So it kind of gets lost in the noise. So Kim decides that it might be really, fun to tweet a picture of him with the actual money that he would use for this buy-in, because he's trying every angle possible to get into this game with Mr. Beast. And this is not just because Kim is a better poker player than Mr. Beast, although I expect that to be the case. This is about the huge amount of promotion that Kim would get because he's in the business of, you know, promoting himself on social media and things like that. So, so we go into the high limit cashier at Aria, which is where the poker show was being taped, and that's where Kim had wired most of his money. And we go to the, you know, because there's the main cage, and then there's sort of a door with a private cage. It's connected to the same thing, but people who doing large transactions don't necessarily want to do this in public. So we walk into this room, Kim is explaining to the host what he wants to do is to basically take out all the money that he has wired in cash and take a picture with it and then put the cash back in. Well, the host was amused by this. And then, of course, when we went to the cashier, first of all, Kim gives his Sapphire card, which is like their lowest card. He's not a player at Aria. And she's like, oh, you have to go outside. And Kim's like, I have $500,000 in your casino right now. Like, please, can I just deal with you here? Okay, fine. So she softened up a little bit, but she was hearing none of this. She's like, no, we have anti-money laundering laws and whatever. We can't just put money out there for you, even if you're going to take, you know, you can use it at the tables. And of course, when you play at the tables, you can't just take the money away either. When you have a front money deposit, you have to put the money back in, and they'll let you wire it back out at the end of your trip. Like, there's a lot of strict controls. So they didn't want him to do that. And so Kim went back to the set of high stakes poker and said, hey, you know, they play with these like $50,000 bricks on the table. And it's mostly just to make for better television. Like, you know, real poker games are just done with chips. This just had bricks of money. So he talked to them and said, hey, can you put a few bricks out? And, you know, maybe I can get a picture with some of the, I think I'm allowed to talk about some of the participants. Yeah. So like, you know, take a picture with like Phil Ivey and Doyle Brunson or something like that. And just, you know, with this money in front of you and try to tweet that to Mr. Beast. And they were originally fine with this idea, but then said, yeah, you know, We don't really publicize that we're taping this show here because there's obviously several million dollars on the table at any given time. It's a closed set. You know, the poker studio, the Poker Ghost studio at Aria is a known location, but they don't really say when they're taping high stakes poker, right? This happened a couple weeks ago. It's not a, you know, it wasn't a public event, whatever. So they have their own security considerations. So they ended up not doing that, but later found out through, you know, clever figuring out of social media that Mr. Beast was going to be appearing at the Wynn. And so we went over to the Wynn and sure enough ran into Mr. Beast. Kim tried to get into the poker game and the people who were playing him at the time did not want him to enter the poker game. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that there is a gentleman next to Mr. Beast basically telling him how to play poker while he was playing against some of the best players in the world in a shorthanded poker game. And of course, you know, especially shorthanded poker, it's very unlikely to get lucky enough to be profitable at this. So, you know, I think that it was just a matter of like trying to control the game and whatever. Well, you know, Kim was like, hey, you know what, can I just buy in? I'll give the proceeds. I'll even give my buy-in to your charity, whatever you say. We'll do, you know, because again, he's definitely getting a lot more expected value from this. None of this worked, though, but we did get to go and play craps with all of Mr. Beast's crew, which, again, my kids recognize the names of all the people that we were hanging out with. They're all like in their, you know, early 20s, probably. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, but, you know, it's kind of meaningless to me. Like I said, all my kids were like, oh, all my friends are very jealous and, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, we'd love to have Mr. Beast on our show. So if anybody knows him, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody was very pleasant. And, you know, I guess if you make your living doing social media things, you're probably a very friendly person anyway. And yeah, so definitely it was a lot of fun hanging out with these people.
We didn't want to cut off your Mr. Beast story, and we have run out of time. We're not going to be able to do recommendeds today, unfortunately. But it's been a lot of fun. So, Max Coins, you know you're going to have to come back again and tell us more about these things. These are both the crypto and the Kim were extremely interesting to a lot of our listeners. So, thank you, Max. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.